Including low-income and older Americans, face barriers in getting the benefits they deserve.
People who are older and people who have disabilities, these are the groups of people who are more likely to be eligible for a lot of these programs. So if we're not doing a good job of reaching them, we're not doing a good job overall.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. Stick around. InfoTrack comes your way right after this.
AutoZone. Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone. AutoZone. Restrictions apply.
Can I get a weight reading on the cat in exam 3?
Zuri needs a new vet tech after their current one literally moved to a farm. But finding an ideal replacement takes some training.
This is like herding cats.
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Schedule virtual interviews and talk to candidates right from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh.
Can I use it where my bra rubs under my... Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness from my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
Hey, Joe Montana here. Back in my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia, a bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older, or 19 or older with certain chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma, you're at increased risk. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
A program meant to fight alcohol abuse seems to be having an extra benefit. It keeps reducing child abuse and neglect, even 7 years after it started. Now, experts want to make it even more effective. With the story, InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. The program that researchers studied is called SNAP, short for Sacramento Neighborhood Alcohol Prevention Project. That's in Sacramento, California. Joining us now is Bridget Freisteller, lead author of the study and professor of social work at The Ohio State University. Professor, you're quoted as saying, after officials launched SNAP, the rates of child abuse and neglect kept decreasing in one area of town, and in another area, the increases have stopped. Can you put some numbers to these results for us?
Sure. The intervention was implemented in both the north and south area in Sacramento. In the north area, after 7 years, we still saw an 11.8% reduction in entries into foster care and an 11.2% reduction of those entries in foster care that were specifically alcohol related. Whereas in South, in the earlier study, when we looked immediately post-intervention, we had seen some increases. Those are no longer significant. So there's no change in the South area.
So does that mean you infer that there's less child abuse and neglect based upon the entries into foster care?
Yes. Children enter in foster care usually due to child abuse and neglect. So what happens is there'll be an investigation. And if the investigation suggests that abuse or neglect happened, there'll be something called substantiation. Then in that case, the caseworkers will determine whether or not a child is at immediate risk for continued harm, in which case they may remove them from the home and place them in foster care, either with a kin, a family member, or with a stranger.
Can you characterize how big a deal it is for the health and safety of children that you've found these results?
Absolutely. What's interesting is child abuse and neglect has been one of those wicked problems that we've had a really hard time moving the needle in some aspects. We're continuing to see increases now since COVID and in the post-COVID time period. Most of our interventions really work on addressing problems within the family. So in the case of substance use, it would be about how do we get parents into treatment so they're no longer misusing alcohol and can be better parents. However, this study is much different because what it does is it says, let's look at how available alcohol is in the community and let's make changes to make it a little bit more difficult for people to get that alcohol. And by doing that, you make changes in behavior, you know, for a group of people that then have resulted in these reductions. These types of environmental interventions, like we did in SNAP, are much more able to be sustained long term in a way that often individual treatment for substance use is not, because we know that that's characterized by periods of sort of relapse and recovery.
And we should point out that SNAP was actually designed to reduce alcohol supply to the area, not necessarily aimed at decreasing child abuse and neglect, kind of a side benefit. But you especially were focused on those 15 to 29-year-olds and people who already drink too much. So drill down for us, Professor. What sort of specific tactics did they use?
Yep. We had five different intervention components. In one, it was really around community mobilization. So getting key leaders from the community invested in the project and to really act as a community advisory board for us as we were implementing the other interventions. We had a community awareness component, and that was really designed to bring awareness to the people living in those neighborhoods about the extent of alcohol problems among their youth aged 15 to 29. Then we had responsible beverage service, and this is a strategy designed to work with those places that sell alcohol in a restaurant or a bar setting. It's about making sure you keep track of how many drinks a person has. And in a retail setting where they're taking alcohol to go, it might be looking for things like fake IDs and people who might be purchasing alcohol that might not be old enough. And then there were two different enforcement strategies. One of those were basically sting operations to send in underage youth to these different retail establishments to see if they were being sold alcohol, even though they were underage. And the second was about not selling alcohol to intoxicated patrons.
We're visiting with Bridget Freisteller, professor of social work at The Ohio State University. This concerns a study on a program to reduce alcohol supply in two sections of a town and the positives that followed. The study is published in the journal Drug and Alcohol Review. So let's turn to the overall approach once again. Now, the study strongly makes the point that SNAP was community-based. Does this mean that local officials had a hand in tailoring the program, and was that important to its success?
We did work very closely with the two neighborhood areas. In both of those areas, we actually had a nonprofit agency that was the lead in the neighborhood. And so one of the reasons we did that is because the neighborhoods had very distinct racial and ethnic and economic diversity in them. So we wanted to make sure that we were introducing these interventions that would be relevant to the folks that lived there. And so they housed individuals who worked on the project, and they also provided feedback all along on the project's activities.
Let me pick up again on your comments about responsible beverage service, because aren't there studies showing that where a person drinks makes a difference? So, for instance, drinking in bars is related to greater use of physical abuse?
Absolutely. It's one of the things that we've been looking at for the past 10 to 15 years now. And it's really interesting. You see where people drink related to, as you said, different social problems. So if you're drinking at a bar, you're more likely to drink and drive than, say, if you're drinking at home for obvious reasons. And so with respect to child abuse, we really see that bar environment is risky for parents using physical abuse. And we've been trying to drill down a little bit to figure out what is it? Is it something about, you know, the amount that you drink at a bar that might make you more aggressive? Is it something about the bar environment itself? You know, people being aggressive, talking loudly to each other, things like that. Because if we can identify those places, then we can start to tailor more specific interventions to address some of these social problems. You know, we feel really fortunate that this overall intervention had a reduction for child abuse and neglect. But the thought is, could we be even more effective if we're able to really focus on those mechanisms that happen in those bars, restaurants, and off-premise outlets that sell alcohol.
And not just those that you specifically mentioned, but also people who drink frequently at sporting events. And what about that as a strategy for trying to bring down the attacks on children?
Absolutely. In other recent work, we found that people who drank on the day of the Super Bowl are much more likely to use harsh discipline strategies. Whereas if you're drinking on Valentine's Day, you're not going to use those harsh discipline. And so again, what's the context? We've been looking again, who are the people that are with them? Are you entertaining? Is someone taking care of the children? You know, what are the conditions that make it so parents are more likely to engage in harsh parenting and aggressive discipline? Parenting practices that we would like them to do much less of. In our study of drinking in sports, it was mostly mothers. It was really mothers who were doing the harsh discipline and not fathers, which I think is very new for this type of work. And so as we start to figure this out and these things all fit together, the hope is that we'll be able to say these are some of the strategies at the community level and then also at the individual level that might reduce child abuse and neglect.
Professor, do you believe that communities around the country should now adopt the SNAP model? Are we there yet?
I don't think we're there yet. I think we need to do a bit more testing of these environmental interventions. The great news is, across the U.S., lots of communities are already engaging in these environmental intervention and prevention efforts. What's really needed is to look at these efforts, make sure we're monitoring those, the evaluations of them, but including child abuse and neglect data with it. Those data have been notoriously hard for researchers to get. States are uncomfortable sharing this data because you're really talking about some of the most vulnerable children in our society. And so what I'm hoping is that as we have results like this, that we'll be able to get more access to those data and we can evaluate those environmental interventions for child abuse and neglect and start to build a stronger research base for it.
Bridget Freisteller, professor of social work at The Ohio State University. Thanks so much for joining us today and sharing your study.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, getting all Americans the benefits they deserve. That story coming up.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead.
This week at Macy's, shop incredible specials on what you need now, like 65% off warm and stylish coats for her, and 40 to 50% off shoes, handbags, and accessories to complete your look. Plus, take 15 to 60% off great furniture and mattress deals, too. And Star Rewards members earn rewards even faster now during Star Money Bonus Days at Macy's. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh, can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness from my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
Hey everyone, it's Joe Montana. Spreading the word about pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older like me, you're at increased risk. So, what's the game plan? A strong defense. Pneumococcal pneumonia can strike at any time in any season, so you shouldn't wait to help protect yourself. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination today and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Now, back to InfoTrack. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Many barriers are hindering the rural use of government programs, resulting in a shortage of services where they're critically needed. Joining us is Megan Henley, PhD, Research Assistant Professor in the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire. Megan, as we will discuss, there are serious challenges faced by rural residents in accessing government programs. What are some of the top barriers that prevent rural residents from accessing government programs? What would some of those barriers be?
Sure. One thing we did was to try to identify themes that came up in the research. There were three that we tried to consolidate all the existing studies into. And one thing that came up was, you know, when there's any change to the way that these government programs are communicating, obviously that can affect our knowledge of them. So in the past, lots of workers used to learn about programs like their retirement benefits through Social Security at work through their employers. It was just part of an onboarding program in a lot of different places. That's changed. Also, people used to receive benefit statements in the mail, and this has largely been eliminated. So as a result, this really can impact certain groups more than others. And I think when we think about this in a rural context, as we think about the types of places where people work may vary in rural areas versus others.
What about older Americans and people with disabilities? They probably have their own set of obstacles, I would think, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's one thing we were thinking about as well when we were doing this work, is that when we know that rural communities tend to have a higher representation of people who are older and people who have disabilities, this is an overlapping issue. So when we talk about disability-specific issues, we're talking about rural issues and vice versa. And so these are groups of people who are more likely to be eligible for a lot of these programs. So if we're not doing a good job of reaching them, we're not doing a good job overall.
Roughly, what percentage of rural residents lack internet access, or at least good quality internet access?
Broadly speaking, people who live in rural communities are less likely to have broadband internet access, or they're less likely to use computers or use the internet to get materials. So when we think about how we're disseminating information, and if government programs are saying, we'll put these intake forms online, that obviously expands access in a lot of ways, but disproportionately across the country. So that might not be affecting or helping out people in rural communities as much as in other parts of the country.
Are there specific issues faced by homeless veterans and former inmates in rural areas?
Yeah, one thing that came up in our research, we found existing work that talked about how there are some communities of people that are just more difficult to reach for obvious reasons. So people who are homeless, veterans, and homeless veterans as their own distinct group. These are people who might have, obviously, a more difficult time applying for benefits, let alone finding out information about them. So our typical modes of trying to reach the public might not work for them. And some existing work that's been done in this area, there's been pilot studies that are trying to find effective ways of trying to reach these folks. So some solutions that have come up have been, for instance, having a dedicated staff person at an agency who can serve as an expert or a liaison to these groups, or just simply be available for consultation for like more complicated cases. And obviously, this is something that affects certain communities more than others.
Our guest is Megan Henley, Research Assistant Professor in the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire, and we're talking about barriers hindering the rural use of government programs, and this is causing a shortage of services. Even for those who are not in rural areas, one of the challenges that's often faced is the design of government websites. And the instructions are just not very clear. Is there any way to work on that to make things easier for everybody?
I think one thing that previous research has found is that online websites for a lot of local government websites, state government websites, which are these gateways to the federal programs, they're inconsistent in terms of the information that's available and how accessible they are. So clearly there are federal guidelines on accessibility, and a lot of the federal sites are in compliance. But when people want to find out information about what resources are available to them, they tend to start at the local level. And so if they go there and the sites are not able to serve the purposes they need, that can be a barrier to getting services in the long run. And obviously that disproportionately affects different groups.
Now, we've talked about a few of the services. Do you have some others you could mention other than Social Security, for example? Are there other programs that are widely disseminated that rural people are not getting?
Sure. I mean, when we talk about Social Security also, that includes not just retirement benefits, but things like supplemental security income, Social Security disability insurance. So there's the group of Social Security programs, but then also things that are available, such as, you know, the Women and Children program, SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps. These are all things that people tend to find out about online, need to apply for online or in person in offices. So we kind of speak broadly to all these different types of federal and state level programs.
This digital illiteracy particularly affects older demographics. Can you give us an idea of, when we say older, what age are we talking about?
You know, much of the research on the older adult population usually is talking about ages 65 and older. But when we're looking at this in some of the work that we found, that varies. Sometimes they'll go as young as 50, which is not very old. And I think a lot of this tends to be a generational issue, right? So the research that we are summarizing here is really everything that's been published since 2012. So when we're talking about people who are 65 and older in the last 10 years, we're really speaking to a generation that maybe didn't have access to the internet as they were in their working years. And so it may be more of a generational effect.
If I'm an older American who's missing out on some of these services and listening right now, what advice would you have for them to maybe get some of these services or at least connect to them?
I think that the internet is a great source for finding information on the programs that you most need. Traditionally, a lot of people rely on in-person appointments to get their answers to questions. That's not always something that's available to people, as we see particularly in the rural context when offices were shut down, or we learned nationwide during COVID when offices were shut down, there were alternative places to go. So I'd say if a field office is not available and a phone number is not working well because of extended wait times, the online services are a great place, and there's usually a local or state level office that can help people navigate those sites.
Megan Henley, PhD, Research Assistant Professor in the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
Get in zone.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
Get in zone.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in zone. AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Hey, Joe Montana here. Back in my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia, a bacterial lung disease that can be life-threatening. If you're 65 or older, or 19 or older with certain chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma, you're at increased risk. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about vaccination and learn more at knowpneumonia.com. That's knowpneumonia.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Is there a link between higher education and cardiovascular health? One medical expert thinks so. InfoTrack's Roy Mackey brings us this report. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Jared Magnani is a cardiologist from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and associate professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Doctor, you recently led a study that examined how a person's education early in life may affect their cardiovascular health decades down the road. Before we hear the results, what caused you to take a look at this connection in the first place?
My team and I have been interested in the association of social factors in relation to longitudinal risk for cardiovascular disease. And we know that a lot of health behaviors like smoking, physical activity, and diet are very much related to whether or not somebody has a heart attack. But we also would like to ask about whether or not how they live, where they live, might be related to their health outcome as well.
Your study's data included 40,000 men and women, and it spanned 1985 to 2015. Tell us what you found in terms of how education affects later cardiovascular health.
Well, our results were pretty interesting, and we were able to leverage a project which pools data from multiple community-based cohorts, and thereby arriving at that number of over 40,000 individuals. We examined education as categorized by whether or not somebody had graduated from high school to high school, whether they had some college, and whether they were a college graduate, these four categories. And we looked over the course of their lifetime, multiple decades, in the relation of their educational attainment and their cumulative risk of having a heart event. We found that people with lower education, such as those who particularly did not complete high school, were definitely at far increased risk, about 1.4 to 1.7 times those who had graduated from college.
Did you find any significant differences between men and women or differing racial groups?
Our primary analysis did examine men and women differently because we know that men and women have different rates of heart disease, and we did find that results were consistent. It was interesting to see that among women, the results were significantly more than they were with men in terms of the association of education with heart disease. We did look at analyses by race, and we found that there was a difference in terms of a gradient of risk between those of Black and white race. So education is protective in those of any race, but it's more so in those of white race, we found, than in those of Black race. And across the board, the risk of heart disease was higher in our study participants who were of Black race.
You also found an age difference in terms of how early someone may experience one of these health issues. Can you maybe fill in some details there on how early or how big the differences were?
When we looked at whether or not somebody had a heart event, we found that those who were younger were more likely to have a heart event during their lifetime than those who were older. So we looked at those who were age 40 to 59 and onwards, and those who were in the older age group, and found that the younger individuals had a greater risk of heart disease.
What theories do you have as to the reasons behind these differences, both overall and also the significant difference you mentioned between men and women?
I would like us to look at education as a proxy for social and economic status. We know that education is completed pretty early in the course of one's life, but in our study, we found that it had implications for health all the way across the lifespan, multiple decades further. What we know is that those who have higher education have more vocational opportunity and therefore can gain more social resources. And with that comes access to healthcare and also access to intangible things like healthier foods and neighborhoods that are in greater proximity to places where people can engage in recreation, obtain healthier foods, and have less exposures to industrial factors like noise and pollution that longitudinally will also be associated with risk of heart disease.
Do you have any final words, maybe a takeaway message for the average American regarding your findings?
Education is a modifiable risk factor. Think about it. We can invest more in education, particularly after COVID, when we've seen so many disparities in terms of how education was diminished, particularly for higher risk groups, those with social disadvantage. So a program, an intervention early in life that all of us take for granted, by enhancing it, can have health benefits for decades to come.
Dr. Jared Magnani, cardiologist from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
CBS News Brief. Republicans in South Carolina overwhelmingly voted Donald Trump over their former Governor Nikki Haley in the presidential primary.
I have never seen the Republican Party so unified as it is right now. Never been like this.
Rallies and demonstrations were held across the world showing support for Ukraine as it's been 2 years since the war began. In Denver, Congressman Jason Crow is pushing to get that bipartisan aid package passed.
If he were to put a vote on the floor, it would pass overwhelmingly. So we're now pursuing every available option to make sure we can get to a vote.
House Republicans refuse to take it to the floor. The U.S. and U.K. with another round of airstrikes hitting Houthi targets in Yemen. The strikes were in response to the recent surge in attacks by the Iran-backed rebel group on ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
Hey, it's Matt Hildreth with the Forgotten Country Radio Show. Each Sunday, Drew Morgan and I discuss and play our favorite Forgotten Country songs, everything from George Jones to Johnny Cash and Casey Musgraves and everything in between. So be sure to tune in right here on 105.5 WIRI Wiscountry.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Our skies will eventually turn sunny. We'll have northwest winds, a bit breezy, with highs near the 50-degree mark. In the overnight, partly cloudy skies and upper 20s. Sunshine and breezy on Monday with our afternoon highs in the upper 50s. It's 30 at our studios.
WIRI Nakusa. The heart of Wisconsin's home for a huge variety of country favorites. This is Country Legends 24/7.
She left me, there's somebody new. She thinks I'm perfect, I swear. She likes my body, my class, and my charm. She says I've got a confident air. She respects my ambition, thinks I'm talented too. But she's in love with an image time is bound to see through.
Hey everybody, I'm Kenny Chesney.
105.5 FM.
A little country
Calvary Church on a two-lane road. A bride and a groom coming out the door. White lace dress and a red bouquet. Just married written on a blue Chevrolet.
Country Legends 24/7 from 105.5 FM.
Whisper to me softly, breathe words upon my skin. No one's near and listening, so please don't say goodbye. Just hold me close and love me. Press your lips to mine. Feel so right. Beside you, I hear the echoes of your sighs. Promise me you'll stay with me and keep me warm tonight. So hold me close and love me. Give my heart a smile.
So
Alan Jackson on Country Legends 24/7.
People always ask me about country music, you know, and I even say this on stage a lot when I say hello at the beginning of my shows, you know, about how I'm going to do country music for you. This song's about life and love and crying and dying and heartache and drinking and Friday nights and, you know, all the things that, to me, have always been a part of country music. 5 o'clock somewhere. This lunch break is gonna take all afternoon and half the night. Tomorrow morning I know there'll be hell to pay. Hey, but that's alright. I ain't had a day off now in over a year. My Jamaican vacation's gonna start right here. If the phone's for me, you can tell them I just sailed away. And pour me something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only half past 12, but I don't care. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Funny you should ask, Alan.
I'd say, pull me something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only half past 12, but I don't care. Pour me something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only half past 12, but I don't care. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
What time zone am I on? What country am I in?
It doesn't matter. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's always on 5 in Margaritaville, come to think of it.
Yeah, I heard that.
You've been there, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
I've seen your boat there.
I've been to Margaritaville a few times.
All right. Well, that's good.
Stumble my way back.
Okay. Well, we just want to make sure you can keep it between the navigational beacons.
Between the buoys. I got it.
All right. Well, it's 5 o'clock. Let's go somewhere.
I'm ready. Crank it up.
Let's get out of here.
I'm gone.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson.
Well, it's a bloody Mary morning. Baby left me without warning sometime in the night. So I'm flying down to Houston with forgetting her the nature of my flight. As we taxi toward the runway with the smog and haze reminding me of how I feel. Just a country boy who's learning that the pitfalls of the city are extremely real. All the nightlife and the parties, temptation and deceit, the order of the day. Well, it's a bloody merry morning, 'cause I'm leaving baby somewhere in L.A. Well, it's a bloody merry morning, baby left me without warning sometime in life. So I'm flying down to Houston with forgetting her the nature of my flight. Airborne and flight 50 cuts a path across the morning sky, and a voice comes through the speaker reassuring us flight 50 is the way to fly, and a hostess takes our order, coffee, tea or something stronger to start off the day. Well, it's a bloody merry morning, 'cause I'm leaving baby somewhere in L.A.
I'm Gene Watson, and you're just moments away from more awesome music from Country Legends 24/7.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Our skies will eventually turn sunny. We'll have northwest winds, a bit breezy, with highs near the 50-degree mark. In the overnight, partly cloudy skies and upper 20s. Sunshine and breezy on Monday, with our afternoon highs in the upper 50s. Right now, it's 28.
Last night I dug your picture out from our old dresser drawer. I set it on the table and I talked to it till four. I read some old love letters right up till the break of dawn. Yeah, I've been sitting alone digging up bones. Then I went through the jewelry and I found our wedding rings. Put mine on my finger and I gave yours a fling. Across this lonely bedroom of our recent broken home, yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone digging up bones. I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting of love that's dead and gone. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone digging up bones. And I went through the closet and I found some things in there, like that pretty negligee that I bought you to wear. And I recall how good you looked each time you had it on. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone digging up bones. I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone. Better left alone. I'm resurrecting now.
it's better left alone.
Here's a cut from the B-side. Country Legends, 24/7, from 105.5 FM.
I tried so hard, my dear, to show that you're my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil scheme. A memory from your lonesome past keeps us so far apart. Why? Melt your cold, cold heart. Another love for my time made your heart sad and blue. And so my heart is paying now for things I didn't.
Carter, and I fell in love with all this great music on Country Legends 24/7.
What you wanna do that for? I fell in love. Took me by surprise.
Country Legends 24/7 with Travis Tritt.
Some of my earliest memories of music was listening to the Grand Ole Opry. Even though that was being broadcast live from Nashville, and that's only about a four-hour drive from Marietta, it seemed like it might as well have been on another planet, like it was a million miles away. My father used to tell me stories about growing up as a kid when he was a boy, listening to the Grand Ole Opry. So, huge tradition that dated back as far as generations before me.
CBS News Brief. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley didn't do too well in her state's Republican primary.
It's hard to defend losing your home state, no matter what the circumstances are. So not a good night for Nikki Haley.
The Bear was a big winner at the SAG Awards in Hollywood last night. Actress Abby Elliott accepted the Outstanding Ensemble in a Comedy Award at the 30th Annual Screen Actors Guild Awards.
We also want to thank everyone who supported actors along the way. Our parents, drama teachers, friends who let us sleep on their couches for months on end.
The BBC's Sue Montgomery has the latest on ceasefire talks in Paris.
Israeli media say the outline of an agreement has been reached for a pause in the fighting and the release by Hamas of the remaining hostages.
And during the first pause in fighting in November, Hamas released around half of the hostages. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
Saddle up, buckaroos. It's time to start the cattle drive with Trail Tunes, the new cowboy, western, and south of the border show on WisCountry 105.5 WIRI. Every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m., join me, Gene, Roy, Tex, and Rex with songs of lonesome cowboys, wicked rustlers, and sighing senoritas. From the sons of the pioneers to riders in the sky, Trail Tunes will have you wishing for those wide open spaces. Every Thursday from 7 to 8, only on WisCountry 105.5.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Our skies will eventually turn sunny. We'll have northwest winds, a bit breezy, with highs near the 50-degree mark. In the overnight, partly cloudy skies and upper 20s. Sunshine and breezy on Monday, with our afternoon highs in the upper 50s. Right now, it's 28.
WIRI Nakusa. The heart of Wisconsin's home for a huge variety of country favorites. This is Country Legends 24/7. WIRI.